And she be dealing with some issues that you can't believe. Single black female addicted to retail as well. And when it falls down, who you gonna call now? Come on, come on. And when it all falls down, man, I promise. And when it falls down, who you gonna call now? Come on, come on. And when it all falls down, man, I promise. I'm so self.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is David Halperin, who's a senior fellow at Republic Report. He was previously founding director of Campus Progress and a senior vice president at the Center for American Progress, senior policy advisor for Howard Dean's presidential campaign, founding executive director of the American Constitution Society, White House speechwriter and special assistant for national security affairs to President Clinton, and counsel to the Senate Intelligence Committee. He also has an article in the Huffington Post, Jury Award $13 million to single mom deceived by for-profit college tied to Mitt Romney. Welcome to Background Briefing, David Halperin.
Thanks, Ian. Good to be back.
And obviously, I want to talk to you about the interest rates doubling from 3.4 to 6.8% on federal loans. It's set to go into effect tomorrow following the failure of the Congress to agree. Let's touch on your article in the Huffington Post, because it's so outrageous. And we've spoken in the past about this for-profit college racket that I think is taking up about $60 to $80 billion of federal taxpayer money, charging them back to mostly minority students and vets at outrageous interest rates, giving them worthless diplomas and indenturing them for life. Now you have a Missouri jury awarding $13 million in punitive damages to a single mother who'd been deceived by one of these for-profit colleges owned and started by financed by Mitt Romney.
That's exactly right. She went to the college and said she wanted to be a nurse. They said, well, we don't have a nursing program, but we can put you on a fast track with a medical assistant degree. After she borrowed $27,000 to get her medical assistant degree, they said, oh, did we say medical assistant degree? We meant medical office assistant degree. You can be an office assistant. Really didn't need to go to college for that. They said to her that she could spend another $10,000 and she could become a medical assistant. She probably still couldn't transfer those credits to a legitimate nursing program, though. So she was very unhappy and she sued, and there were articles about it and the fact that she stood up to the school that has systematically deceived students. But I remember the name of the school, Vatterott College. It's one of the schools that Mitt Romney's investment company advises people to invest in, a company started by his son, but where Mitt Romney is now chairman of the investment committee. So they're in business together. It was the same family of colleges, same owners, that Mitt Romney praised on the campaign trail when they asked him what he thought about education. He said for-profit colleges were good. Full Sail University was a wonderful school. It turned out he's one of the owners of Full Sail University. Anyway, I use Mitt Romney because he's a good hook to get people to pay attention to this issue. And this issue goes to the larger issue you mentioned of student loans. 25% of federal financial aid goes to these for-profit colleges. That's a large amount to be sucked up by schools, many of which, not all, but many, are a ripoff. But getting back to this question of the student loan interest rates, it is harder for people to pay for college in this world. And I went back and checked these statistics. In 1980, a federal Pell Grant paid for 75% of a public university education for a student, low-income student. Now those Pell Grants pay for about less than a third of such an education. State aid to education is down. So the question is, when we talk about how high the student loan interest rate should be, are we moving to a country where family wealth is really the main determinant of whether you can go to college and where you can go to college? And I fear that we are, and that's why I believe we should be keeping these interest rates low.
Well, the House, of course, passed a bill where they've tied rates to U.S. Treasuries with a cap of 8.5%. And the Senate, for example, Elizabeth Warren put forth a proposal to set rates at 0.75%, which is what big banks pay for money from the Federal Reserve. And that was her first standalone bill as this freshman senator, and that didn't even make it to the Senate floor. So where is the divide between the Democrats and the Republicans on this? I mean, clearly the Republicans have a higher cap than the Democrats, but no, except for Elizabeth Warren, nobody's talking about going back to the Pell Grants.
The Democrats are split. I mean, certainly we're in a situation where there's a federal government is short on revenues. We're trying to get closer to reducing the deficit. So they're thinking, well, how can we make money? We can make money loaning it to students for student loans. And that seems valid. But again, my principle is it is harder and harder for a person of modest means to pay for college in this country. There's a number of ways that we can basically redistribute income and wealth to make it easier for such people to go to college. One way is to have a lower interest rate. But again, because the government doesn't want to give away too much money at this point, it's not clear how much we are going to do in that regard. But I mean, if you take somebody like John Roberts, there's a conservative, the Chief Justice of the United States, he thinks America should be a meritocracy and people should be rise and fall based on their talents. Well, the one way to do that is to use some of our tax money to help lower-income people who are talented go to college, as opposed to just saying college is for rich kids.
Well, Elizabeth Warren, of course, said we should not be making money off the backs of our students. She's referring to the $51 billion in revenue that the federal government gets from the student loan program.
Right.
You know, so hers is obviously a minority voice here because she didn't even her bill didn't even make it to the Senate floor. They have when they get back, I think, after the 4th, they have a chance of doing something, don't they? But again, you have this problem with the Senate versus the House, and the House feels that anything comes from the Senate, the big brother is an imposition.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what the House will do. I just think that the president, who had some notion of a market approach to this, rather than a minimal interest rate, a subsidized interest rate, if you will, to help students, ought to stand up strong and say, this is a way that we can make a difference and move talented people into positions and careers that can help strengthen the country. And if we're not investing in young people, and if we're only making it possible for the wealthy to attend elite colleges, then there's something wrong with the country. So I believe it's an investment we should make. Of course, the student loan system had to get fixed. Before we were giving all the money to the banks, students were paying higher rates and all the profits were going to the banks for no good reason since they bore no risk. So at least we fixed the system now and the federal government is the lender. But what we ought to do is, I mean, a 0% interest rate or a very low interest rate is subsidizing students, but we shouldn't be ashamed of that. Because that's what makes our country great is mobility and opportunity. That's what we should stand for. And if we're really just saying, gee, we can make some money off this now that we're in the student loan business, then I think we've kind of missed the point of why we're in the student loan business.
Again, I'm speaking with David Halperin, who's a senior fellow at Republic Report. He was previously founding director of Campus Progress and senior vice president of the Center for American Progress, senior policy advisor for Howard Dean's presidential campaign, founding executive director of the American Constitution Society, White House speechwriter and special assistant for national security affairs to President Clinton and counsel to the Senate Intelligence Committee. Now, having been the counsel to the Senate Intelligence Committee, obviously Dianne Feinstein was recently talking about, obviously she's made a number of statements about Edward Snowden, but your family has a pretty intimate experience of the government wiretapping. I recall back in the days of President Nixon, Henry Kissinger didn't he order the wiretapping of your father, who was on the National Security Council, Mort Halperin? And so did you as a family experience the intrusion of Big Brother on your life?
Well, a lot of people did. President Nixon wanted to know what the heck was going on, who was leaking. So a lot of journalists and a lot of government officials, or a relatively small number, were wiretapped, the logs were monitored by the White House to find out what was going on. I was a little boy living with my parents. Yes, they listened to our calls. We went to Santa Monica, actually, for a summer, and the family that rented our house, they were listening to their calls because they happened to be living in our house. So there was intrusion then, and there are intrusions now. Those wiretaps were ultimately judged to be unlawful. And now, of course, you've got in the wake of all this, we created a national security court, the FISA court, that the White House, that the Justice Department authorities are supposed to go to and ask for permission to listen in and monitor our calls and monitor our emails. But now we're seeing, as recently as today, new information about what goes on at that FISA court and what kind of things have been approved. So we're still in a world where we are being heavily monitored. Maybe there's a little bit more structure and a little bit less lawlessness associated with it, but I think there are still serious issues that we have to address about what's going on and whether we want the government to be able to listen to everything that we say and write to each other when we think that those things are private.
Well, David Halperin, all of those reforms, or so-called reforms, came in because of the abuses of Richard Nixon against your father and others that led to the Church Committee hearings and then led to this, to the creation of the Senate and House Select Committees on Intelligence. But clearly a lot of people are unhappy about the extent to which we know what's going on. And people on those committees, there's a couple of dissidents, Senator Wyden, for example, who are frustrated because they know stuff they can't talk about. And you were counsel to the Senate Intelligence Committee. So that's a bit like being a eunuch in a harem, isn't it?
It depends, what your values are, what your concerns are. And I do think that if you're a member of that committee and you see things that are classified that you don't like, there are things you can do short of leaking the information to try to get things straight. You can bring in, which we used to do, top officials of the intelligence agencies behind closed doors and grill them. You can conduct your own investigation. We did one once, and I actually, as a very young lawyer, got to sit there and depose the head of the CIA, Bob Gates, and ask him questions about what had been going on with some actions by the CIA that we thought were not truthful and not appropriate. So there are things you can do. The intelligence committees are not entirely, in my experience, captive of the intelligence agencies. I think that they could be tougher, and there have been times when they were not as tough as they should be. But it is an important institution, the absence of which I think that we would be less honest. I mean, for years and years, so many of the things that we kept secret were not things that we were really hiding from our enemies. They were things that we were hiding from the American people because we didn't think that they would agree with them. And those would include, overthrows of democratically elected governments and attempts to assassinate foreign leaders. We just didn't want our citizens to have a debate about that. And I would say that's the same thing that's happening with the disclosures made by Mr. Snowden. Al-Qaeda is not going to be surprised to know that we can read their Facebook posts and their Gmail accounts. They know that we can do that. And I don't, whether they change their behavior in response to it, is up to them. But the classifying a program that says that we have access to phone records and internet records is not to fool or outsmart Al-Qaeda. It's to avoid having a public debate about whether we should be doing those things. And that's not, to me, an appropriate use of classification. And whether or not Mr. Snowden is a hero or not and where how he should be treated, I think is I don't know. But I do know that some of the things that have been disclosed do not look like the kind of secrets in terms of their existence as opposed to how they're accomplished, that really the disclosure of which is going to harm national security. I don't really believe that, and I don't think that the NSA or the White House believes that.
Well, of course, the Europeans are furious, particularly the Germans, about revelations in Der Spiegel, presumably that came from Snowden via WikiLeaks, because WikiLeaks had an arrangement with Der Spiegel that the U.S. classifies them, the Germans, on the same level as Iraq and China. That the only countries that the NSA doesn't snoop on are Canada, Australia, Great Britain, and New Zealand because of the arrangement that they all have in sharing each other's signals intelligence. So that's certainly doing some damage, at least.
That's a harmful disclosure, no doubt. And I think there are legitimate reasons to classify that information.
And the president's finding that was publicized on the eve of the visit with the Chinese president, where it revealed a list of countries that Obama asked to be targeted for cyber attacks. That certainly undercut Obama's position with the Chinese leader.
Yes. I don't think that people who get paid to safeguard secrets and to work with secrets are heroes if they're just throwing the stuff out there. If there's real corruption, serious wrongdoing, the whole, you know, widespread abuses of human rights, those are the kind of things that I think a hero could be, someone could be a hero for blowing the whistle on, even if they breached a government duty. You know, maybe they should still have to pay a price of punishment for it, but I would say that person is a hero. But if you're just throwing stuff out there to be provocative or without really thinking about the consequences of it, you're not my hero.
Well, I've spoken to a couple of lawyers who represented at the Government Accountability Project who represented some of the whistleblowers who were wrongly charged. They never took secrets out of the NSA, but they were held at gunpoint, and their careers were ruined. And these lawyers eventually got them exonerated, although they don't have their jobs back. And I asked the question, you know, where is there a place? They kept saying there's nowhere in America where you can come that's safe if you're a whistleblower. And Dianne Feinstein, the chair of this Senate Intelligence Committee, said that Snowden should have stayed here in the United States. So does he have that option? I mean, that the idea that he's in the custody or under the hospitality, shall we say, of the Russians is very troubling, given that they control that part of the airport where he supposedly is. And it looks like the longer they keep him, the more it's apparent that they're debriefing him. And now Putin is preparing the Russian press with long programs on how terrible the Americans are and all that stuff, which seems to be leading up to the possibility that Snowden will end up in Russia. And Russia is not exactly a sanctuary for human rights victims, you know.
I told you I think Putin is my least favorite person after Donald Trump, and I don't think it's not a model of anything positive, really, in terms of the government, in terms of Putin's government. So, again, the fact that Snowden might, you know, decide that that's the appropriate place to end up and to spill his secrets to, I don't respect, and it makes me wonder more about Snowden, which is not to say that I don't appreciate that we're having a debate about his disclosures of the fact that the government's just gobbling up all this data that includes all our information, because that's a concern. You know, when you read about what happened when offices had access to everybody's files, to celebrities' hospital records, celebrities' tax returns, it gets boring in the office. Eventually people open up and want to see Angelina Jolie's hospital records or the private emails of Kanye West or whatever. And so we don't want that temptation in the government's hands, even for fun, and we certainly don't want it for abuse. So I think it's good that we're now having a debate, however it happened and whoever Mr. Snowden is, about the ease with which government spies, government bureaucrats can look at all our information, monitor our traffic in whatever form. It seems to me that if they know of a terrorist, if they know of particular patterns of terrorism and other threats to our security, they should be able to go in and target that and request that data, but not just have all the stuff at their fingerprints. I just think that is 1984. That is a society that is subject to serious abuses by government. You know, a lot of us love Obama. Or we love, other people in the Obama administration. We think Eric Holder's a nice guy. I know that he is. But I don't necessarily want to worry about who the next guy is and what that person might do, or that John Ashcroft in the hospital might decide to go with the bigger, stronger guys instead of the guy that's telling him to do the right thing.
Well, just in closing, what then do we make of Senator Feinstein's admonition to Edward Snowden that he shouldn't have left the United States, that he should have gone public here? Does the mechanism exist for them? Because, you know, whistleblowers end up getting creamed, and inspector generals tend not to stand up for the people they're supposed to be protecting.
Well, I think there has been harsh treatment of whistleblowers, and I think the administration may have probably pushed too hard. They've certainly gone too hard, in my view, against journalists. But I do think that, if he really believed he was doing the right thing, then the more responsible thing to do would be to take the punishment. He took on a government job. He accepted the security clearance and air his grievances in a public trial and potentially, you know, serve time for it, rather than do what he's doing now, which is saying, well, you know, I'll run around, I'll make it a more romantic thing. But ultimately, if what he's doing is debriefing the Russians, a more corrupt, a more abusive government, he isn't really doing much for the world. So I think it's a difficult choice. I don't know everything that happened in his life and everything that's going on. But I can understand what Senator Feinstein's saying is, it's not, you're no hero if you're appearing with Putin and getting a beautiful place to live in Russia and being treated as a hero there for doing something. I mean, at the hands of a government that is much worse than ours.
Well, David Halpern, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thanks so much, Ian. Talk to you soon.
Again, thank you. Again, I've been speaking with David Halpern, who's a senior fellow at Republic Report. He was previously founding director of Campus Progress and senior vice president of the Center for American Progress, senior policy advisor for Howard Dean's presidential campaign, founding executive director of the American Constitution Society, White House speechwriter and special assistant for national security affairs to President Clinton, and counsel to the Senate Intelligence Committee. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back getting an analysis of the just-passed Senate immigration bill.